Hello and welcome to your Christmas dose of the latest sustainability fun news, facts and reviews brought to you by the Green Elephant. This week, is world leadership about to get serious on climate? Should we take the nuclear option? Top 10 tips for a sustainable Christmas. And the competition is closing. Get your reviews in quick. Joining me to discuss these and more as usual is Russell. Good morning, Russell.
Morning, Russell. Morning, Mike. And I must admit, you have gone all out with this Christmas show with your hat and your decorations in the background. And your, it's just, I'm overwhelmed at me sitting here in my Grinch outfit.
At the lack of decorations that are in my background, yeah. Anyway, also coming up are our sustainability selection, a challenge update, and of course, a Christmas fact or fake. We'll also be talking about Apple, FTSE, Cisco, palm oil, Recycli, noise, bats, cows, bison, monkeys, and because it's Christmas, presents, wrapping paper, cards, and turkeys. So there have been a number of announcements this week. And we're wondering if they herald a shift in the mood of world leaders to address climate change. Firstly, we had the UN Climate Ambitions Summit 2020. This was hosted by France and UK and was for all the countries to come and, you know, talk about the latest updates on climate. And one of the outputs of that was that EU leaders agreed to cut emissions by at least 55% by 2040. And why that's interesting is that it's a big increase on the previous commitment, which was to reduce by 40% by the same date. So it's a 15% increase by the same date. So that's good. Yeah. Next, we also had Joe Biden, who again reaffirmed his pledge to rejoin the Paris Agreement on his first day in office. So that's great news. And he also committed to holding a global climate summit within his first 100 days in office. So more good news, more commitments. And finally, there was news from the C40 Cities Network that 54 of the world's leading cities are rolling out plans in line with meeting emissions cuts in line with the Paris Agreement. So 54 of the major cities in the world all taking action on meeting their cuts in line with the Paris Agreement. So a number of stories there, Russell. And sound the bell for a change in attitude by our global leaders? Or what do we think? These are kind of, you know,
you do fear. Bites. Yeah, you do fear that it's posturing in the face of irrefutable evidence. As the evidence rises and rises, and we're just kind of swimming in it now, is that we've got to change our, and we've got other stories, some hideous stories later on, about how we have an impact on the earth. And maybe they have turned the corner and realized they're going to have to take that hardcore stance, or as you say, there is always a danger that they never follow through. We're still in the situation, aren't we? The majority of targets, and I saw another one, another target again this year. We constantly missing targets. Are these just targets to be missed? What if we don't? You know,
is there a sense of, so there is evidence clearly. Is there a sense of not wanting to be an outlier? So all these government cities are, you know, making the commitment because they themselves don't want to be seen as the city or the country that isn't committing or isn't doing anything. So it's kind of we better go along with this, and we better do what everybody else are doing and kind of follow the crowd, maybe.
I don't know. I think when it comes to a city level, there's an element of pride in a city and a community that effectively could pull together to do it. And if the community leaders all get their heads on and are all pulling in the same direction, which is rare in any political environment, then they could make a change. But it only comes with people listening to the leaders, listening to the people, and then actually moving forward with something.
Otherwise, I think that's the nub of this. It's the people that are starting, people like us, hopefully, and our followers and members of our herd and, you know, the wider society were starting to talk about and insist that these issues are addressed, that is meaning that governments and cities and organisations are needing to take notice of this because they are politicians and they want people to vote for them. And so therefore, you know, my slightly cynical view is that they're doing these things because maybe they want votes and not because necessarily they...
Well, there is a chance that I'm thinking, obviously, we're in the UK, but this is across the world, that the next elections that are fought could very well be fought on climate issues and environmental issues and not on perhaps, you know, how can you make me that little bit rich or a little less poor, probably is the better expression.
So there was a few facts about on the city, on the micro level, which were really interesting. So mass tree planting is going on in Buenos Aires. So that's a tangible thing they're doing. They're building new mass transport networks in Mexico cities. And I think I saw something about they were building, you know, a huge cycle network. That was in Houston, Rio de Janeiro is doubling tree cover in the city streets. Milan is dedicating huge bits of its city to walking and cycling. And we had a story about, was it Barcelona last week, is converting, you know, huge squares in the city to kind of garden areas and green areas. So, you know, those are things that are actually happening. Those are not, let's set a target and commit to doing something by 10 or 20 years in the future. You know, the cities are doing something today. So,
and and I think that's fueled by a lot better information as well. I was looking, funnily enough, last couple of days as I prepared the 2020 review show.
Yes.
Next week, the SDGs, the Sustainable Development Goals by the UN, they've got a dashboard for all the stats they can pull together.
Yeah.
All the different areas, and I came across one, and I'll put it in the show notes because off the top of my head, I can't remember it. But it was relating to SDG 14, I think, is life on land. And the amount of tree cover that we've lost. And it's everywhere. We think about the Amazon rainforest or huge forests, you know, huge rainforests there are around the world. They're being depleted.
Mm.
But it is everywhere, absolutely everywhere. We've decimated tree cover across the world. Finland was probably one of the highest by landmass. So a fantastic source of information just to show you what we've done in the last 15 years to trees. And so, you know, anything we can do to add our cover, green cover back in would be
So we'll watch that one through 2021 and beyond, and see if this really is a step change or whether it's just more, you know, meaningless statements.
Chatter, yeah.
So we're really pleased that many of you have taken the plunge and left a review for our show on your podcast providers. Subscriber numbers are growing, and that's brilliant because it really encourages us to keep going with the podcast. But we do have a competition open, which closes next Tuesday, to subscribe and leave a review for the Green Elephant Show. And we are going to take the best review in our opinion. Probably something that makes us laugh, I would think. And that best review will win some goodies. I think there's a notebook and a bag and some other bits and pieces coming up. So the winner will win a set of goodies, and we'll announce that on the show next week. For more information on that, go to the show notes page at greenelephant.show and find out how to enter. So that closes on the 22nd of December. Challenge update time now. So we are in the midst of a sustainability shopping challenge, and particularly as it's Christmas, you know, are we shopping sustainably, and how are we doing that? Have you finished your Christmas shopping, Russell?
Sure. As I said before, we're doing it, so it's only one present each. So, but who I'm buying for likes a good selection of goodies, so and treats more than anything. So that it's I'm nearly done. It's only just bits and pieces I can find. I've bought the majority of what I can from the local vendors in my town, which has been great. Obviously, it's, you know, some of the quirky bits have come from online stores. I tried to steer away from Amazon, but sometimes you just can't, because people have put their whole shop and lives on Amazon, and and that's their shop front. So we definitely bought less.
And that was going to be one of my points, is maybe for sustainability reasons, maybe because you know, we, like everybody else, it's been a tight year financially, so we haven't been able to, and haven't really felt the need to actually to buy the volume of stuff that we bought previously. So buying less is something certainly I've done. I've bought some local stuff. I bought locally from a couple of local B Corps. So yeah,
that's good.
So and obviously we talked about digital stuff. So and
now
wrapping. Well, you were going to talk to us about, you mentioned last week that you've got some ideas on sustainable wrapping, and that you were going to enlighten our listeners with.
I rave about this because I think it's absolutely brilliant, and the Japanese to bring in something that's both simple and beautiful. The Furushiki Furoshiki.
Okay.
Type that into any well-known search engine, but Ecosia is one we recommend.
Yeah.
It shows you, there are videos galore, and there are sites that sell specialized wrapping paper, but essentially you can take a secondhand silk scarf. I've bought ones for £1. In fact, I bought 7 for £4.
Okay.
Just old silk scarves from eBay.
Yep.
Or you can buy a bandana, or you can buy specially made Furushiki wrapping
yeah,
paper,
sure you can,
which is eye-wateringly expensive. But usually, you can wrap anything. You can wrap food products. You can wrap bottles, which are always a devil to do with paper. It uses no sellotape, uses no string. And
so
the wrapping paper itself can be a gift in itself. So a silk scarf, if bought for the right person, is the wrapping paper. They unwrap it. Not only have they got the present, they've also got wrapping paper.
So no sellotape. Right? So how do you keep the wrapping on the object?
It's as is the origami of fabric, this is, but with knots, which are hard to do with paper. But essentially, clever folding and tucking. There are lots of ways you can do it, but the simplest thing is you put your box in the middle of a square of wrapping paper, tie a square knot on the top, on two corners, the other two corners together, opposite corners, ties, not on top. And you get wrapped, beautiful, and it's a bow as well. So you don't have to buy any of those plastic stick-on things either.
Okay. Well, so, we'll put a link to that in the show notes so people can go and have a look at Furushiki.
Yes.
Interesting technique.
It's just brilliant. And if people don't like the wrapping paper, instead of throwing it away, it goes in your cupboard for next year.
So we did say last week that we would share our top 10 tips for a sustainable Christmas. And so at one, and we're not going to put Pick of the Pops behind this, maybe some jingle bells. At one, buy from sustainable organisations if you can. So we've mentioned B Corps, but Fair Trade, and there's other markings, but buy from a sustainable organisation if you can. Number two, Russell, is...
Do I get to go? I'll buy a present for the planet. So perhaps donate on behalf of somebody. You could buy, you know, some form of tree planting or something like that.
Very nice. Number three, rent a tree, or or use an artificial one forever. You know, artificial isn't necessarily worse if you use it for 30 years.
This is true. Yeah.
The worst thing you can do is buy one and throw it away every year, either real or artificial. So. Yeah,
and we got kittens, so you can imagine how many trees we're going to have in our house this year.
Yeah.
Number four is reduce or ditch the meat. Now, of course, we had Vivember, and we did without meat, and we concluded that if you can, you should, but if you can't, just reduce. And if you do reduce, then you can perhaps buy better quality organic local meat, and that would support your community as well.
Just have a smaller turkey, people. Stop sending cards is tip number five. Why do we need to send cardboard and paper around the world?
And the carbon it takes to deliver them, although our postal service in the UK, of course, is very foot-bound, so it's actually quite a CO2-friendly. Yeah. Decorate using nature rather than tinsel. In fact, definitely not tinsel nowadays. Yes. Tinsel is a plastic thing, which ends up predominantly in the bin eventually.
Number seven, check the provenance of things you buy. Where is it from? Where is it made? Who makes it? Where are those people based? So do as much as you can reasonably to check where it's come from, not just the product, but the materials that it's made of.
Yep. And also then when you've bought that product, of course, you've got some packaging and wrapping paper if you're not using Furushiki. But make sure you recycle everything. It's very easy when, and especially with kids, I expect, where they ripped off all the paper in the excitement. It's just this great big bundle of paper. To fold it up neatly and bung it in the recycling might seem a faff. Big black plastic bag comes out. Everything gets shoved in. Yep. What a waste.
No, absolute. Christmas is a time of waste, and let's try and reduce that or recycle it. Which comes on to tip number nine is do everything in moderation, whether it's eating or presents or waste or whatever it is. Do all these things at Christmas in moderation. And finally, think about people and the planet. It's about getting together with people. It's about being outside in nature, looking after the planet. It doesn't have to be a consumer fun fest. It can be about more things than that.
So. And that could help our prosperity in tight times, but it perhaps gives us a better focus than just it's all about the gifts. It isn't all about the gifts.
Yep, indeed. Our review for the week is a book. So had the pleasure, and it was a pleasure, of doing an interview with Leanne Bell, who is the author of How Can I Be Eco-Friendly, which is a book about, you know, for every man, really, about how to be more eco, more sustainable. Leanne is a bit of a specialist in kind of fast and circular fashion, but her book really focuses on how do you make sustainability easy for everyone, really. So that interview will be coming up in the new year. Do listen out for that, because it was great fun to do, and there was a good fun fact or fake, and I think I might have lost again. I think Leanne was rather too good and knew her stuff rather too well. So check out How on Earth Can I Be Eco-Friendly. There'll be a link in the show notes. Get it from Book Depository if you can, rather than certain other retailers. Helps the author a bit more. So go and check that out. We'll put a link to Leanne on social. She's really lovely. And that's the recommendation for the week. So the government in the UK has reignited the row over whether we should be a nuclear country by restarting talks with EDF Energy over plans to build a new reactor at Sizewell in Suffolk. And the government, as it has done in other places, will take a big financial stake in this. But it obviously restarts the debate on whether nuclear energy is good value for money. It's incredibly expensive, whether the UK needs new nuclear reactors, and how we're going to meet the rising demand for low carbon electric due to, you know, things like electric vehicles, induction hobs, heat pumps, all those things that we say are eco-friendly. All of those things that we're moving to require electricity. And if we're not going to use gas or coal-fired power stations, how are we going to generate it? But obviously the environmental campaigners have had things to say about this. Greenpeace have warned that nuclear reactors are unnecessarily expensive compared with renewable energy combined with battery storage technology. And the local community group Stop Sizewell added that the reactor posed a risk to the natural habitats along the Suffolk coast and the nearby Minsmere Nature Reserve. So this isn't just a story in the UK, although it's a current one in the UK this week.
Yeah.
A story around the world. We know in China they're opening brand new coal-fired power stations. We know in France that they've very much gone down the nuclear route.
Yeah, they are.
They see that very much as clean energy, whereas, you know, other places see nuclear as, you know, not a great option. We've seen things like Chernobyl, Fukushima, where nuclear has caused untold environmental and local damage. So it's a really tricky one, isn't it? We're going to have to get this power from somewhere.
It is. It's, I suppose, what the problem is balancing, isn't it, nuclear? Nuclear is clean at the point of generation. It's just later on, it's not so clean. You get a whole stack of other problems. Now, we're you know, the biggest earthquake we've ever had in the UK is about 2.4.
Tiny.
Yeah, which would be like, you know, a big truck driving to past this outside
the house.
Whereas... and same for France. And so from perspective, we haven't heard of any disasters in France. It's probably because they haven't had an earthquake. I don't know if I'd grow any more of these nuclear facilities in an earthquake or near a near an active volcano. But not suggesting there are any, but there could well be. So I don't know. I'm on the fence on this one. It is clean energy-ish. But it isn't clean energy. I'd much prefer to see us go down the true renewables, drawing from the sun and the wind, and possibly wave power.
But it's the battery technology which is behind. There's an awful lot of the renewables which is just wasted.
Yeah, and instant generation is needed.
Yeah,
you know, we do need instant generation, so they need to be able to turn it on, or else we'll fall to the stuff that can be burnt, and that's gas and coal.
Yep, when everybody stops at. After the Queen's speech on Christmas Day, or the halftime in the World Cup football final, or whatever the big event is, and they all go and put their kettle on or switch the light on, that those surges in demand need to be met.
And it's going to be. I think it's an interesting one because we use that illustration, don't we, of switching the kettle on after the Christmas edition of EastEnders or something.
Yeah.
In the UK, but the. It's no longer the case, isn't it? People stream it, they watch it at their own time, they'll do it on catch up. But we also have found out that people are Netflixing and streaming in high definition, which is having a equally detrimental effect on, but it's just over a long period of time. It's over 2 hours instead of over 30 seconds. So we use electricity is changing. So maybe renewables,
really interested to hear what listeners think about this debate. We've got listeners from around the world and with different opinions, so it'd be really interested if you could look us up on social at Green Ellipod, and we'll post some questions about this nuclear versus renewables debate, and we'd love to know what you think on this one.
Could we do a vote? I think that'd be good.
We certainly could do
just the straight for and against.
Yeah, we'll put that up soon. So now time to look at some other big sustainability news stories from the week. And first up, the first of two stories about Apple. And a story this week that former employees say that Apple stood by while suppliers violated Chinese labor laws.
Yeah. And
this comes back to the supply chain discussion we have most weeks on the Green Elephant Show. And it's the law in question, thankfully, wasn't related to conditions. It was relating to kind of pay more. It was about they've got a law requiring no more than 10% of a factory's workers to be temporary employees. So very much they've been doing lots of temporary employees. Yeah, and they were found that of the 362 factories they looked at, nearly half were over the quota for temporary workers. So, you know, this is not a historical problem. This has continued right up to the current time. You know, not 10% of temporary workers. They've got much as almost 30% of temporary workers. So it's all very well for Apple to make bold sustainable claims at the front end.
Yeah, I mean, we reported a few weeks ago that they suspended their Pegatron major supplier on the basis of this very problem. So I'm going to jump to Apple's slight defense, in as much that there's a lot of suppliers to get straight. And you know, essentially trying to contract manage your your hundreds of suppliers is a tough job. However, they're a big company with a lot of money, perhaps
with a huge amount of money and a huge amount of profit. So yeah,
it is true. So yeah, pull your finger out, Apple, but we'll cut you a tad of slack. The next one, again, looking at big companies, but I'm going to take a slight positive spin to start with, in as much that of the 100 biggest companies, FTSE companies, those on the stock exchange in the UK, 92 of them have reported to disclose their carbon dioxide emissions in line with what will be coming up and become mandatory next year. However, and the negative side of the article we'll put a link to in the show page, is that companies such as BP, Glencore, Rolls-Royce, Just Eat and B&M are among the eight that haven't. So these massive behemoths of companies have not voluntarily shared, even though they're coming under a lot of pressure from their stakeholders, their shareholders, their investors.
I thought that the good thing about this story was the fact that this is becoming law. You have to report your emissions and your carbon footprint. That's a great step, is that that becomes law next year. And it's good to see that, you know, in this instance, we're able to move as quickly as they did in China in their plastic reporting laws. So that's a good thing. Other large companies have committed to the Climate Pledge, which is a broad worldwide commitment to net zero carbon by 2040. And I kind of think this is more positive than individual piecemeal company announcements. So this week we've got Atos, Brooks, Coca-Cola, ITV, Microsoft, Nestle, Unilever, and various others have joined this Climate Pledge this week, which says, you know, they're going to get to net zero by 2040. A decade ahead of the 2050 Paris goal. So happier to see them joining that and being part of that group rather than these kind of vague, individual commitments. So that's good.
Yep. So moving on to another large company, one that some may not know much about, but we do, Cisco, who produce electrical equipment, have already achieved 100% renewable energy for its US operations. That's good. Doesn't say worldwide, but we'll give them a bit of slack. They got a new goals for its fiscal year 2025, where they're committing to accelerate their contributions to the circular economy, which is always very good in their particular arena. Although Cisco products are very expensive.
They are. And for listeners that don't know, why Cisco is important is that essentially Cisco and Huawei are the two companies that run all the string and wire and bits and bolts and devices that join the internet together. So without those two organizations, the internet wouldn't work as it does today. So they are kind of vital to the functioning of, the internet as it is today.
This podcast brought to you by Cisco.
Well, not really, but it wouldn't be if Cisco weren't around.
But they are. So it's good news. They are kind of central to the growth of our economy and the stabilization, and helping people and the planet in many ways. But they need to reduce their packaging and incorporate circular design principles. And they're going to use more virgin plastic, which is difficult for electrical manufacturers, as we'll tell you more about soon. And they're going to try and improve their packaging to reduce the amount of waste and such like. So, good-o. And they're doing it for 2025. So the 2040 aim pledge is, I'll do it 15 years earlier than that. That'll be good.
A couple of months ago, there was a big fanfare, new iPhone 12 announced. And one of the key things Apple said was more sustainable because the boxes are smaller, because we're not including a charger in the boxes. And that was the main thrust of their sustainability argument. However, this week, we find that the new MagSafe charging station, which again, doesn't come with the charging block and cable, we find that the charging block and cable, the old ones, which Apple say we're not including because everybody's got them, they can use them, they're not powerful enough to run these new devices and stations. So you have to go and buy one anyway. Isn't that just the worst thing to say? We're saving you all this packaging and we're being sustainable and stuff. We're not including a charger, but oh, by the way, you need to go and buy one anyway in a packet separately with separate shipping and separate.
And extra money because they didn't reduce the cost of the base product because they didn't include a charger.
And why didn't you go USB-C anyway, which everybody has? Moving on from that disappointing
news. Please, Apple are getting a beating. We are Apple fans.
We are. We use Apple all the time, but there's, we use Apple all the time, but
it is starting to make us a bit weary, weary. If that's just the thing. Let's look at very local to us into Cornwall. There's an pioneering environmentally friendly biofuel that is going its first undergoing its first of a kind trial in Cornwall, headed by a local oil supplier. I've seen their trucks around, Mitchell and Webber.
Yeah, me too.
And it is said to using a hydrogenated vegetable oil produced from certified waste fats and oils, easy for me to say. But unlike previous biofuels, HVO is manufactured by synthesized process with hydrogen to create a greener renewable fuel. And it's been certified by the International Sustainability and Carbon Certification Body. So that seems great. I mean, anything we can do to make dirty vehicles cleaner.
Yep, remove fossil fuels.
They're going to be around for a while.
Yeah.
No, we aren't going to get rid of diesel cars and lorries overnight.
Yeah, so that's great. Another oil alternative, this time palm oil. Now, I thought that yeast was used for making beer and bread, and that was good. Yeast is good. But it turns out yeast is even better because scientists have kind of done some modification of yeast, and they've got a variant that can be allowed to evolve, and as part of that evolution it produces loads of oil, and they essentially squish the oil out of the yeast, and the oil that's produced is an alternative to palm oil. So we know palm oil is really bad at deforestation and is in so many products that we, you know, domestically use, you know, foods and creams and whatever else. So wouldn't it be great if we don't need to deforest and grow palm oil, we can just grow it in a lab from yeast and squeeze it.
Excellent. Moving on to a company called Recycle-i. I think that's how I said, but it's recycle with an EYE at the end.
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
It looks more awkward than it is, isn't it?
Could be recycle ye, but I expect it's Recycle-i.
Yeah.
They've, on the basis that this I that they are generating, and they've just got some good seed funding raised, which looks at waste as it travels by from our recycling, and can detect and classify all items in waste streams. Now, it does say all items in waste streams, broken down by material, object, and even brand. So apart from being able to, you know, reduce the number of manual waste pickers, and that is not a particularly pleasant job, so that's a good job to get rid of. It also perhaps will lead to more accuracy and some better reporting, because if we can get brand back, we can say here's the biggest producer of plastics that ends up in recycling.
So
that's actually quite key.
That's a good thing, isn't it?
So that would be good.
And big brand, 50% of our packaging was recycled, and we can prove it.
And there's that's good for a big brand, and then they could work better on the rest. Okay. So this is a great thing, and I'm hoping they're looking to expand quickly, and they're using their Microsoft's AI for good programs. So this is certainly looking very promising for improving our waste recycling.
We've talked about the benefits of COVID and noise reduction in previous shows, but a study this week shows that ocean noise has dropped by 30% thanks to fewer cruise ships and other vessels traveling around the world. That human created noise has dropped. So the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and Texas University have been doing a study using hydrophones, which is underwater microphones to you and me. So they've just seen more whales in coming back to areas that they hadn't been. So positive side of COVID.
Yes, and how we keep that going when everything restarts will be an interesting issue.
Indeed.
I kind of had to really dive into this next article. The headline is "Human-produced mass now outweighs the Earth's biomass." Now, I first had to work out what the Earth's biomass was.
Okay.
Which is not the whole Earth.
Nope.
Because that wouldn't make any sense. We'd have to be drawing stuff from outer space to make heavier than that.
Mm.
But essentially what this means is that the stuff where we've drawn stuff from the planet and created human solid buildings, roads, dams, whatever it is,
yep.
the weight of that now exceeds that of the material which we draw from.
It's like the crust of the Earth, essentially.
It also introduced a mass of 1.1 tetratons.
Yeah, I did like tons is a lot of is heavy. Gigatons, I thought, well, that's unfeasibly heavy, isn't it? And then I saw tetratons,
which are presumably is above petatons as well.
Well, I don't know, but
we are talking tons, a lot of milk cartons, it's a lot of zeros. It's a lot of road, and we know there are, you know, massive building projects. We've seen ones in China where they've built 3,000 miles worth of new motorway. Mm.
Well, building projects, Bellway Homes have been fined £600,000. They were trying to build. But they were trying to build in the same place, which was a breeding site of bats. And I've seen this a number of times where people have to stop and they get the wildlife expert, the bat inspector, and they come and they take the bats out and they move them to another location, you know, because they're in the loft and they can continue building. But Bellway Homes just kind of sent bulldozers in and just... gone with the work. And I think this was just good to see that the legislation which protects bats has some teeth, because unless you hit these companies where it hurts financially with a big fine, I'd say that £600,000 is a big fine.
Yes.
They're not going to stop. So I think, you know, Bellway and other builders are going to think twice before, you know, building on a building over the bats in the future.
Yeah, it's good. Moving to dairy farming, and of course, when we went through Vivemba, milk was one of the things that we struggled with. But there's a dirty secret in dairy farming, and that is, and this was in 2018 in the UK, and I guess this is worldwide, that an estimated that 95,000 male calves were being killed every year.
Right.
Euthanized at birth. As soon as they realize they got a male, they get rid of them. Now, that's pretty horrific.
Yep.
In any book, regardless of the pollution that animals bring, you would have thought there'd be a better thing they could do with calves. They are trying to reduce it by having cleverly engineering how they inseminate their cows, let's put it that way. Yeah.
Just female calves, which are kept because that's the next generation of the dairy herd, so you're not getting the slaughter of the cows. So it's got to be a good thing, isn't it? I mean,
but they're actually going to make it law to stop it. You're not allowed to do it. That comes in next year, but they've got a year to comply.
Cows have a kind of a wild relative, the bison, and the European bison was on the extinct list, but it's had a bit of a recovery, and there are now more than 6,000 in 47 herds in Poland, Belarus and Russia. And the talk here is a reintroduction of bison into the UK. I think that might give me a bit of a fright if I saw a wild bison whilst I was out walking. But it's great news that, you know, there are species that are recovering. On the other side of the good news of recovering species is the bad news of extinct species.
Loss.
And... there was an update to the UN's red list of endangered species last week, and 31 more species were listed as extinct, including three frogs in Central America. And I think there was a river dolphin, maybe.
Yeah, tux.
But yeah, so we'll link to the report. But yeah, so as much as there's good news, there's also bad news.
I do like the idea of a Frisian cow looking across the fence and going, "What the hell is that?" And another Frisian turns around, "It's a distant relative, but we don't like to talk about it."
That's your great 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 grandmother, and she looks angry.
That's your mum, that is. Yeah. So keeping with the monkeys, monkeys are not could be banned from being kept as pets.
Monkeys as. Do people keep monkeys as pets these days?
It is quite astounding, really. Some people do it under a zoo license and probably do fairly good welfare standards. But that's
not a pet. That's in a zoo.
Well, it's under a zoo license. So whether they strive to be a little bit better. So there are these people that are able. But those people that are keeping them, like marmosets and capuchin monkeys and such like, are likely to see themselves having to either register as a zoo, I guess, or keeping a standard of welfare, yeah, or not.
Firstly,
keeping them at all.
Great news. Amazing. This is going to become against the law, but I'm absolutely gobsmacked. 5,000 monkeys in the UK living outside zoo. Lemurs, monkeys, other primates. All those wild animals. Why would, you hear of people keeping huge cats, leopards and stuff, and then they've got huge reptiles, huge monitor lizards and things. All of this stuff should be against the law. Why are they keeping wild animals indoors and as pets?
The RSPCA on this one said they're seeing shocking conditions where monkeys are cooped up in bird cages, fed fast food or sugary drinks.
A cat.
Or even class A drugs. I mean,
oh, God. I mean, why do you get a budgie? Get a dog. What do you need?
You just don't need it. And then to not look after it, you've got this precious, intelligent animal which needs stimulating and have some space, and then you keep it in a cage.
It's just wrong. Coming up over the Christmas period on the Green Elephant Show, we're not going to leave you high and dry. We are going to keep you entertained. Next week, we have our review of 2020, so we'll be looking back over some of the stories and the highlights of 2020, and we'll also be announcing, of course, the winner of our review competition. So get those reviews in by the 22nd of December. The following week, I think, is the 30th of December. We'll be doing a preview of 2021. So we've pulled out some of the things that we will think are making news in 2021 in sustainability, some of the trends we think will be continuing, and some of the plans we've got for the show for the coming year. So stay tuned. We will be around over the Christmas and New Year period.
Could we make any guesses to what's going to happen in 2021? Because
absolutely,
let's face it, 2020 has been my most hated word of the year has been unprecedented.
Yeah. Oh,
in these unprecedented times, in reviewing 2020, we will see how bonkers a year it has been. It's been bonkers.
We make no promises in our predictions.
but I think it'd be great. I think I'll come up with a few predictions for the 2020.
So it's now time for our Christmas fact or fake. So we've talked about Fushikiyoki or whatever it's. I can't remember the name for the rapper. Yeah, that's the one. But in terms of wrapping paper, Russell, 27,000 miles of wrapping paper is used each year in the UK. Is that a fact or is that a fake?
Oh, you know what? I did research for a song that we wrote, but we haven't shared with anybody yet. Actually, I just remembered. Perhaps we'll bung it on at the end of the show. We could tag it on the end of the show, couldn't we? I would say that's too low. I would say that's a fake.
So 27,000 miles is too low. It's actually a fact.
Oh.
27,000 miles. That's still a lot of wrapping paper.
Yeah.
And that's in the UK. if you take it globally, I think I read that there was enough to wrap around the world 10 times or something daft, but that's UK. Another one. So of all those presents we're buying, so only 5% of consumer goods are still in use 6 months after Christmas.
Oh, dear. You know, that's a distinct 5%. If that's true, that's horrendous. I'm going to say that is fake.
It is a fake, but not because of you. Not because of your reasoning. It's not 5%. It's 1%.
Oh my goodness me! I thought it would be higher.
That 1% of consumer 1%. Goods are still. 1%. I just. Yeah. One of our tips this week was to not send Christmas cards. And here's a statement. 1 billion Christmas cards end up in the bin each year.
I think that is a fact.
It is a fact. My round number didn't persuade you, but yeah, a billion Christmas cards.
I think it's a broad estimate, but yeah, unfortunate for you, I think I might have read the same stuff. Mm-hmm.
Talking of broad estimates, and we talked about eating less meat. The equivalent of 1 million turkeys end up in the bin each year.
You know, I don't know how to play this one. You're back in the round number game again. Mm. I know what you're up to. And presumably that's parts of turkeys, plus yeah, people that didn't get around to eating a whole turkey.
the equivalent of 1 million turkeys.
I'd be horrified if it's a fact. If it's a fake and it's higher, I'd be even more horrified. So I think I'm going to say it's a fact.
It's not. You were right. It's a fake because it's higher. 2 million. Two million turkeys. That's a lot of meat just thrown in the bin.
And on the basis that we have so much food poverty in, and it is, you know, when we say poverty, we're not thinking, you know, severe poverty that they suffer in some parts of the world. But obviously, in developed world, poverty is a different game.
Yeah.
But it is ridiculous that people are going hungry and we're throwing 2 million turkeys away.
Yeah. So 1 in 10 unwanted Christmas presents ends up in landfill. So the stuff you get bought but you don't want. 1 in 10 unwanted Christmas presents ends up in landfill.
Oh, you know what? On the basis that you've been a devious, I'm going to think that actually is going to be disappointingly higher than that. And so I'm going to say 1 in 10 is a fake.
It's not. It's a fact. 1 in 10. I mean, 1 in 10 is bad enough, but 1 in 10. I mean, just, you buy something and it just gets thrown straight in landfill. How? I mean, others are wasteful, you know, offcuts of turkey or wrapping paper or cards. At least they've served some kind of purpose.
Yeah.
This one's awful. It just gets bought and thrown in the bin. I mean, it's just all thrown in landfill. Anyway, those happy facts conclude Fact or Fake for this week. And finally, before we go, a few stories for Christmas. We went through Vivember and, you know, not eating meat. Maybe you could eat insects. A man who died of constipation 1,000 years ago had gobbled on nothing but grasshoppers for months before his death. The unnamed man had been chowing down on the critters until he got so severely blocked up that he died. So scientists have been experimenting on the mummified remains of the hungry fellow. He died an estimated 1,000 to 1,400 years ago. So a precautionary tale on insect consumption.
There's a couple of things there. I'm not too sure how this demonstrates, you know, good use of scientific time, but aside from diagnosing a 1,000-year-old death is not something I really care about that much. Yep. Are insects that bad? I suppose the story is pure protein as a single diet source. Yep. It's not good for anything, you know. Yep. But I like the idea. Experts said he would have been too weak to move. I would have thought he'd been a bit jumpy. But the reason he wasn't is because villagers would have fed him the bugs with the legs ripped off. Oh, so that's why he wasn't jumpy.
But good news for Christmas shoppers, if you're looking for a present, there was a heartwarming review on Marks and Spencer's website. A lady was looking for a Christmas gift for her dad, and she found a pair of slippers that she thought, oh, he'd love these. But she read through the customer verdicts on these fresh feet pair of slippers, and one review caught her eye. A fellow M&S shopper who'd lost his leg offered to give away his left slipper to anyone who'd lost one. He wrote, 5 years ago, I lost my right leg, so I never wear the right slipper. So if you are missing a left and take a size 8 and need a right slipper, I'm allowing M&S to give you my email address and you can have one for free. There we go. There's the spirit of human kindness. You can have the other slipper.
In terms of Marks and Spencer's diversity, they really need to do something about this single leg shopper issue, and perhaps they should come up with a scheme. You want to read about that, Marks and Spencer's, please.
And finally, a really sustainable shopper doing the right thing. Christmas jumpers have become a staple during the festive season, but this grandmother got more than she paid for with a festive knitwear this year. So she was doing the right thing, going bargain hunting. She went to her local car boot sale and looked around and paid 50p for a Christmas cardigan. However, the teaching assistant didn't notice the romping reindeer on the front when she bought this jumper. So she was trying on her cardigan at home and she noticed that there were two reindeer getting frisky on the front of her Christmas jumper.
There is a picture, you can go over it.
You can look at the picture. Luckily, the grandmother...
They are two males. The one that worries me.
Who works at a primary school noticed the detail before heading into school with it on.
Yeah.
So sustainable shopping doesn't always give you what you're looking for.
Yeah.
Anyway, if you enjoyed the show, please do go and visit the show page at greenelephant.show. There you can find links to all the stories we've discussed, instructions on how to leave us a review, and links to find us on all the usual podcast providers. Please do go and visit and review, as it really helps us to continue to make the show and hopefully keep you entertained. So hopefully we'll see you at greenelephant.show or on social at greenellipod. But until next time, or even next year, thanks for listening, and we hope you have a sustainable Christmas.